to 6-Bit Storybooks, a podcast that encourages you to slow down, absorb the beauty around you, and love the moment you can create. This podcast shares reflections from me, your hostess Melissa, and friends who have genuine passion for what they make and for sharing themselves with you. So steal a few moments out of your day to allow others to pour into you and enrich your creative spirit, bit by bit by bit. And yes, all those bits add up.
Well, aloha, dear friends. I'm excited that you and I can sit together and talk today. I am going to be visiting with you solo. Melody's been feeling, she's been feeling well, but her throat was very scratchy and not at all something that she should have to take on today, the podcast. So it's us. Before we start and chat about what I'd like to chat about, that I'm hoping will be of interest to you, I'd like to share with you a great email I got from Catherine. She says, "Hi, Melissa. I don't think I'm up to figuring out how to record and send audio, so text it is. I totally and completely understand the dilemma of having more yarn than a project calls for, and so not wanting to break the set by knitting something that will leave a few skeins left over." I'm going to give you an aside here, listeners. The background of this is last week's episode where I kind of lament the fact that when I go to my stash and I see 10 skeins of yarn A and I only need 5 or 6 to do a project, how I feel a little bit of a conundrum in the idea of breaking up the set to not use it to its fullest capacity. So that's to what she's referring at the moment. So back to what our friend Catherine writes. "I keep waiting for the perfect project that fits the yarn. If I have 10 skeins, I can't knit a project that will only use 6. That yarn must wait for a project with more yardage. Because what if later that project comes along and I use the yarn? I'm so glad it's not just me." She goes on to write, "I don't know how exactly you calculated how long your stash would last, but I don't want to know. If I calculated my stash time to be knit, I would weep. I'm really enjoying the podcast and the storybooks. I can't imagine how you juggle everything with moving again. Best wishes on a smooth move. I guess you have it down to a routine now. I've moved 3 times since 2010 and don't envy you that, Catherine." Well, Catherine, thanks so much for checking in with us and sharing that. It's so much fun to hear what you all think, that it just opens up the chat, it opens up the conversation, and it makes it more lively. So I appreciate hearing from you all. I get excited about it, and I look forward to hearing more from you. On the note of the move, I just wanted to bring everyone up to date. As I'm chatting with you today, I'm sitting in our front sitting room, and I'm quite enjoying a lovely spring day. There's a plover bird out in the front. I love seeing them. They're just so much fun, and they seem so regal, and they stand so erect, and then they bob up and down, kind of like a seesaw or a teeter-totter. So that's out my view. But I'm here in the front room because my room is in a bit of shambles. My office, workspace, studio room is also in a bit of a state of disarray. The actual entrance hallway to the house has books stacked that we've been sorting through, and we're going to rehome to people we love. The house is in, I guess the nice way to put it would be, it's in a state of flux as we're preparing for the exodus. to St. Thomas. It'll be a great adventure over these next 6-8 weeks to prepare to move down there. And I'll keep you posted as it goes. But I thought it was interesting when Catherine mentioned that it seems like I juggle a lot. I think all of us do. I think sometimes when we think someone's juggling more than us and, oh my gosh, how do they do that? I think it lessens the fact that we are all quite savvy, creative people. We do many different things. We wear many different hats. And I think it's something that we have in common a lot more than we tend to give ourselves credit for. We often find ourselves looking and seeing all the amazing things that so-and-so A is doing and so-and-so B is doing, and they look like they're doing it so well. And I think we need to stop and take a moment and look in the mirror to see that even when you think you're not juggling it perfectly, you're still probably doing a better job than you're allowing yourself credit for. So, to you, dear listener, I'd like to just mention, before we get into the knitting and fibery goodness, you do a great job of being you. You do an amazing job of taking care of the things that you need to take care of. Everyone has room for improvement, and everyone has things that they do that are just stellar. So be kind to yourself today, and remember to take a moment, look in the mirror, and recognize the fabulous things that you're doing. All right. Now, I don't know if you can hear in the background. Let me lift it up a little bit higher towards the microphone. Can you hear that sound? You might not be able to hear that. I'm sitting in the front room, and I've got a floor umbrella Swift. I love it. It's got the three legs, and it is this beautiful walnut color. It's completely wood except for a few metal pieces that, you know, your screws and your, I guess they're washers. The majority of it, 99.9% of it is wood. And I just love how it's gotten darker over time. And it slowly and gently just spins around and around as I'm balling my yarn by hand. And as I'm balling this, I wanted to talk to you all about springtime and lightening up and the fibers that are lighter. I love, love, love linen. I know a lot of people love wool, and I do enjoy wool. But after so many years of living in Hawaii and just loving knitting on the beach and really being excited at the opportunity to wear what I knit, I found linen is just the perfect yarn for me. It's a fiber that I adore. I just really enjoy working with. And I talk about it a lot amongst friends and was surprised at the fact it sometimes gives other people a bit of a run for their money. And some of the things, I guess, that I saw as interesting characteristics about linen actually drive some people nuts. And I thought perhaps if I share with you some things that I've found about linen and working with linen, that perhaps it might help you a little bit with maybe a growing affection that you could discover for linen. I love linen. I've used a lot of different kinds of linen, and today I'd like to share with you just a few kinds that I enjoy that are 100% linen. That's going to come in just a minute. First, what I want to do is share with you some linen blends, why I think using linen blends is a good idea, and just some ideas and characteristics that I've found as I've worked with both 100% linen and linen blends. Now, what I love about linen is it is like iron. It reminds me of a skillet. My Bapshi had a skillet. It was a black skillet. It was heavy as anything. And she used it forever. And when she passed away, my grandfather used it. And when he passed away, he gave it to my dad. And I think, if I am not mistaken, that skillet is still in my dad's possession. And it will probably make its way down the family line probably long after I'm gone and my kids are gone. It's just a heavy duty instrument for the kitchen, right? As my grandmother, my bop, she would use it, it would crack me up because she took really different care of that versus she had a lot of copper pots. I don't know if you guys had family members that had those. They were, she had a copper kettle, she had copper pans and pots where they were coppery on the top and they had a different color on the bottom. And I just remember thinking those were really interesting ones. And then she had these black skillets and she just treated them differently. She didn't use them for everything. And when she did use them, she washed them and cleaned them differently. Linen reminds me of that skillet because linen is going to last for a long time, but it's such a workhorse that you have to season it. You have to kind of get to know its temperament. And you have to realize that just like that skillet, you know, it's heavy duty. It was super thick. It's not something you could toss up in the air. Not that you should be tossing up pots and pans. So this is where the metaphor loses ground, but it softens and it gets seasoned and it blooms and its best foot comes forward in the length of time that you use it. So I find that a lot of the things I've knit in linen and even items that I've purchased in linen fabric have lasted me quite some time. I'll have to post a picture on the blog of a camisole that I got from the Gap when I was, I think, my freshman year in college. And it wasn't until 5 or 6 years after living on Kauai that it just started to come apart. I wore that thing out, had that thing for many years, and was completely devastated when that camisole just started to fall apart. The longer I had it, the more I washed it, the softer it became. And so it is with linen. It's often combined with other fibers. And the neat thing is, it's a great opportunity when you get the skein of yarn, of linen combined with perhaps silk, maybe an alpaca silk. You can slowly work your way into getting to know the feel and the sturdiness of linen. And gently ease into the 100%. The great thing is, because it's really strong, you can have a lot easier care of it. Now, I don't, and I'll just tell you the truth, I don't toss any of my hand knits into the washing machine. I just don't do it. I don't mind washing them by hand. And now that there's so many awesome ways to just soak your hand knits and not really have to launder them too heavily, I find that the care and maintenance is super easy. The effect as it's been washed and it softens and lightens and just blooms is great. If you're in a place where it's hot, linen is just nice and cool and it feels dry. As strange as that sounds, it feels dry. And what I mean by that is it doesn't just feel dry on you after you're wearing it, but oftentimes people will say, you know what, when I work with it, my hands get dry. And I think that's the plant in it, the plant that it's made from. It just, plants, you know how they bloom with moisture? They have to take that moisture from something, and sometimes it's our hands. So a couple things that I find that I do before working with linen to ensure a proper, enjoyable time whether it's a linen blend, and especially if it's 100% linen, I definitely take care of my hands ahead of time. And I know this may sound a little crazy, but I try to make sure my nails are trimmed and that I don't have any hangnails, because I ball and wind things by hand if it's linen, which I'll address later on and kind of share a bit more about that. But because you're constantly using it in your hands, you can get really frustrated if things catch. Second thing is I make sure that I have a good moisturizing moment with my preparation. I'll take and just use a little bit of olive oil, rub olive oil on my hands throughout the day, before and after, and make sure that I dry my hands really well and wipe off the extra. And I wait a little bit after I've put moisturizer, whether it's olive oil or a type of hand lotion. I wait a good while for it to soak in and do other things so that way it doesn't get all over the yarn. Now, the thing is that 100% linen is my sweet spot, but it is very drying, and it's slippery. So when we talk about that, I'm going to share with you just a few different things that I like to do in preparation for balling the yarn. I will say with a blend like I'm doing now, I'm using Fern Fibers Summer Morning, and it's an alpaca, silk, and linen blend. The majority of it is alpaca. It's 50% alpaca, it's 25% silk, and 25% linen. So when I use this, I don't pre-soak the skein of yarn. Anything that isn't 100% linen, I don't usually soak or do anything to, unless it's a really dark, deep color. And then I do that. I pre-treat things that are dark colors anyway, because I'm afraid of the bleeding. So this one I'm just balling up right now by hand. And as you ball it, if you have a chance to sit in a sunny little spot, you'll notice sometimes little pieces will flake off, and as it's unfurling and unwinding, you can look at the yarn as it goes by, and you can actually see the little hairs reaching out, and it just gives a lot of dimension to the yarn. I'm going to stop and just look at it and kind of describe this for you. This is a very light fingering weight. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a very soft, gentle pink. It was dyed naturally out of St. John's wort flowers. It, because of the silk content, it already has that summery vibe. You know, when things are soft and gently fading and there's pops of white in it, it just, to me, conjures up springtime and summer, kind of like whitewashed walls. Very, very sturdy as I pull it. You can hear it pop, 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 pop. And unlike wool, I never even attempt to try to pull it and break it. The only one I do that with is, there is a yarn, it's Space Cadet Creations Thebe, and it's a blend. It's not 100%, it's not 100% linen. It's a silk and linen blend. And that one is so thin that I will pull that. Just out of respect for my hands and the fact that our hands are our tools for not just knitting, but so many things in life, I don't try to break the strands of yarn. I don't like pulling and stretching and having that sometimes biting feeling in my fingers when I'm trying to pull apart yarn. So I do cut linen blends with scissors. The yarn, can you hear that? That's me just pulling on it. I'm not trying to break it. I was just holding the ball and popping it. It's kind of got that snap, not just in the sound of it, but definitely the wearing of it. There's something really beautiful about pulling linen out of the dryer when I've got a few dresses that I'll toss in the dryer on low. And when I pull them out, they're just crisp and they're tight together. And the weave of the fabric is tight together. And it just kind of pops. Or if it's on your if it's on your clothesline and it's flapping in the breeze, it just has that sharp, brisk pop to it. When I knit with it, I like the feel and the sensation of that. If linen hasn't been your thing because of the fact it's so sturdy, working with a blend allows you to have some of the beauty of linen offset by some of the more gentle aspects of alpaca. You know, alpaca is soft, and because it's from an animal, it kind of brings that warmth that animals give us. Plant fibers, to me, I always think of them in context of where they come from. So if you have animal fibers, animals, I generally want to look in their face and see their soft little gentle noses, to give them a hug because they're warm. I don't generally hug my aloe plants. I talk to them. I don't really wrap my arms around my basil or my rosemary. I do use them. I like to touch them. I love the scent of them, but they're not things that I like to hug and embrace. And that's kind of how I feel the difference is. You get a little bit of that animal property mixed in with your plant-based fiber, and it gives you the structure and the rigidity of, like you see in a plant, a nice, strong, sturdy cell wall. You know, when we're talking about plants, they have those cell walls that when you're in biology class and you're drawing out the cell walls, they were all square and compartmental and rigid. Whereas, you know, the round human animal cells are just kind of bobbing and weaving and flowing and doing their thing. So blending it together gives you that that warmth from the animal, from the alpaca. The silk, I think the silk kind of lightens it a little bit. It kind of gives it a softer, almost flyaway. I always think of silk as being wispy and gentle. And then the linen brings to it, like I said, just as you would imagine, I always think of my aloe plant like I do linen. You know, the aloe plant, when I get my sunburn, I snip a piece off. You can see the structure and the integrity, and it's like a little army soldier standing up ready. Yes, it'll bend and sway, and it'll yield to me when I snip it to put the aloe on a mosquito bite or sunburn. Or it works great after you've balled up a lot of linen and the areas around your fingertips. I use fresh aloe for everything. It's something I miss very much about living on Kauai. We had aloe plants all over the yard. Now we just have them indoors. But the structure of the linen is there, and it gives a good definition to the yarn. And then you have the softer vibes of the living, cute, furry animal friends mixed in. So perhaps instead of delving right into 100% linen, why not look for good quality blends? Try to at least get about 25% of linen in there, just to kind of slowly ease your way into it and then work your way up. And the great thing is, if you get a linen blend, you never have to do anything, but you don't need to worry about, do I need to pre-soak it? For me, I don't pre-soak and pre-treat the skeins. You can totally do what you like in this next aspect of what I want to share with you. Don't feel like my word is gospel, but I do use linen a lot. In fact, last summer I did an entire six-piece collection, which was kind of the beta test for Six Bits. The Wander collection was completely all Quince & Co. yarn linen. I used Sparrow and I used Kestrel. Sparrow is a lovely 100% linen, traditional style yarn. The Kestrel is, I think, really interesting. It's a flat kind of chainette constructed, almost tubular, flat, but you can kind of, as you're balling it by hand, it's flat, but you can manipulate it and see how it's a chainette round yarn that's been flattened. Both were a real joy to work with. And so I spent a lot of time swatching and preparing for that collection. It's an assortment of pieces that are perfect for spring and summer, or if you live in a warm place all year round. The way I approached those, though, I'm going to stop bawling this so I can really concentrate. It's so funny, as I've been bawling it, my computer has all this little hair now from hand winding it. But as you're winding things by hand, the great thing is your hands and your muscles and your body get to know it. You get to feel the sturdiness of it. You get to feel the pull of it. You get to see the sheen of it. So I say save yourself some aggravation. I don't use a ball winder for linen at all, because I find, one, I miss the opportunity to remind myself what I'm about to jump into. And two, I find that if I use a ball winder and my Umbrella Swift and I'm trying to put those two together with the linen, I get a snarly, gnarly mess. And it's not a cake. It's more like a deflated souffle. You know, like when you open the oven and the souffle is just like, you know, so not happening. That's how I feel about the cakes, that they are, you shouldn't have done this cakes. They're like rotten cakes, bad cakes. No substance there cakes. So I definitely recommend balling it by hand. Before you even get to the part about balling it, you can do what I do if you'd like. You can try it once and see what you think. But I generally will take the skein of yarn and I untwist it. And then I get silk ribbon, just silk ribbon that I have on hand. And I tie loosely four choke ties around it, but not tight choke ties, but just in case, you know, the moving and shaking and manipulating of washing it, soaking it, floating it, so it doesn't become a mess. Because before I would do this and wouldn't add the extra choke ties, oftentimes I would see where the choke ties had loosened or things had gotten kind of snarled, and I would wind up very frustrated trying to untangle knotted places. So I go ahead and I tie four extra choke ties in silk or silky ribbon, not real silk, but silky ribbon. Sometimes in a pinch, I've taken scrunchies and just kind of tied them around too, or beads, you know, hair beads, just something to reinforce the fact that, okay, the skein is not going to come apart. And then I find that I just get a big basin of water or my tub, and you can do several of them at once. If you've got, like for the canyon top that I did, I took the skeins of kestrel and put them in the bathtub and let them all kind of float and do their thing together. What I like to do is use soak or eucalyptus. Or not, is it eucalyptus? No, eucalyptus is the hand treatment stuff. Just a good quality yarn soap. And I generally do use soak. And I think I always screw up the names of soak. Is it yucca? Y-U-C-A, yucca? We joke around about it always being yucca here. So I'm sure that's not the way to pronounce it. But I like the smell of it. The grapefruit is also really good. And I kind of think part of the fun of pre-soaking it is kind of giving it that fragrance, if you're into fragrance. So I'll give it a good soak in some tepid water. Swishing it around, I let them soak. I press them down in the tub with plenty of water so they can soak it up and enjoy it. And then when it's time, I pick them up, squeeze them out, take them outside, and I pop them. Pop, 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 pop. I don't slap them against things. I just put them on my arms, and just pop them out, turn them a little bit, pop them out, turn them a little bit, pop them out. And I'll let them just hang over the arm of some outdoor furniture and slowly bake in the sun. After I do that, then I put them on the umbrella swift, and as I need them, I will just wind them by hand. I wind them nice and slowly. I'm not in a hurry, just like I'm doing now. I'm picking it up again. I just do balls where I wind it in one direction, turn it in the next. Constantly doing it nice and tight and giving it a good stretch out. Some people I have heard will do it when it's still slightly damp. And I guess if you're going to knit really fast, you could do it with them slightly damp. I know I have not ever done it that way just because I guess, you know, I always hear things about mold. Not that I'm sure I have not had any experience where my yarn has gotten moldy, but that is something that I have had people back in one of my knitting groups on Kauai that says, you know, I do it when it's still slightly damp. Like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. That's not how I do it. I wait until it's dry and then I ball it up. And then the fun happens afterwards. You can get, if you have little kids, you may identify with this, where for some reason socks that go in the wash never come out together, and you may have some small socks floating around the house. If you do have a sock or two that doesn't have a mate, I like to get as small as it can possibly fit. I know some people use pantyhose or tights. If I wear tights, they're usually footless tights. And I know people will say, well, they snip the foot of a tight. I have not done that, but I have used small socks, and I will put the ball after I've wound it in that, and it keeps it safe. You know, it keeps it nice and tight. And then that's only if it seems really, really slippery. Most of the time I've balled it, and with Sparrow, the balls are nice and small. I use Sparrow a lot from Quince, and I find it's not till the very end that it starts to get a little slippery. And so sometimes with 100% linen, if it's slippery, which I love that quality about it, it's shiny, it's bright, it's full of energy, kind of like, because it has, I mean, you can see it has a lot of energy. Of course, it should behave like it's going to have a lot of energy, right? So I think that's that slipping factor. To me, it doesn't upset me because I kind of see as I'm looking at it, to me, if it's shiny, it means, hey, I'm ready to move and groove. If it's fluffy, it's more inclined to kind of stay put and kind of live where you put it. Something that I like to do is you can get paper towel rolls or toilet tissue rolls and take and kind of flatten it a little bit and cut a little notch in the top upper right and the bottom lower left. And I will feed a little bit of the yarn, like I'll stick it in the notch and kind of wrap it and start my ball that way and wrap and wrap and wrap and wrap and wrap. And so it has something sturdy to hinge on. And then I turn it and I snip a little bit on the right side and the left side of the tube. And maybe I'll try to put this online so you guys can see it. And then I turn it and then I've made like a flat starting ground when I ball it by hand for the slippery stuff, because I find that it doesn't really come apart when it's big and sturdy for me. It usually is towards the end when it kind of is starting to just get to that beginning stages of the ball. So I find if I give it something to grab onto, it helps. While you're balling it, you're going to notice that even if you did soak and pop and let it just sunbathe gently outside, the linen is still going to behave as its personality warrants. It's still going to have some stiffness to it and some rigidity, which is the beauty of it. It's going to make it a piece that lasts for a long time and can look very crisp and that you can iron and look flawless in, and then you can sit down and then all of a sudden you'll have wrinkles, but it just looks really beautiful, has such a nice drape. You're going to find, though, despite the pre-soaking, that after you are done with it, the pieces or the segments that you've created, or if you've done it all in one piece, they're still going to be slightly stiff. So after it's completed and you seam the pieces together, another good soak is, I think, a great idea. And I also like to, and definitely practice on your swatches, I like to give my pieces a light ironing, or you can take and you can make like a little butterfly, a little bobbin of the linen, just a small bobbin, but elongate it, like wrap it around the width of your hand instead of just around, you know, a small finger or two. Make it a good size, and then put a cloth over top of it and use your iron and steam it a bit. Steam it, get it good and hot, and see how it looks afterwards, just in that small bobbin. Or do the same thing with your swatch, and you can kind of assess how it's going to behave after you steam it. I, of course, always love swatching because I like playing with yarn. I don't think swatching is like study hall and it's a bad thing. I think it's like research, which I always love doing, like researching for papers, researching for topics. It's a lot of fun. So I think that playing with the bobbin or the swatch is a good idea. The linen, though, for me, and I wrote down a couple of notes when I was doing the collection for Wander last year. And one of the things I noticed that when I did a substitution, not in linen, so I practiced with the linen and wanted to see how it would behave perhaps in a linen blend or even wool, I found that the way I knit the linen swatches, my stitch count might be right, but my row count would be a lot longer. In, for example, Canyon. Canyon is, for me, it's one of my favorite pullovers that I've done. It's a lot of fun to knit. It's very fluid. It's very drapey. And it has some drop stitches. But I found that when I knit that, for example, in a cotton or in a wool, the row gauge would be substantially different from that of my linen. So I just find that for whatever reason, I can tighten it up and make the stitches come together. Like if you're holding hands with your friends, you can pull them in tightly next to you. And I can pull my friends in close. I can get them in super close. But no matter how closely I pull my friends in towards me, the act of pulling them in towards me, I can't change their height. And I feel like linen's like that, that I can bring my linen in a lot, but I find that it's nature for me. It's just always going to stand taller. I think that has to do, again, with the dynamics of the fact that it comes from a very proud cell wall base, and those cell walls hold the plant erect, and it gives the plant some pride to stand on its own. And the linen doesn't lose that when we spin it up and turn it into a thread or a yarn. So that's something just to keep in mind. When you are using linen, I strongly suggest, of course, balling it by hand. I definitely enjoy soaking it ahead of time. If you feel like you're going to be bouncing it around from place to place, put it in a sock, a nice, tight, secure something to hold it. But also take time to play with it and get to know it by swatching. Swatch and see if you use different needles, what you like and what you don't like. I find that, like natural fibers, I like natural needles I try not to use metal when I'm working with linen at all, unless I have lost my needles and they've gone astray and I have nothing else. I don't generally reach for metal because, or plastic. I just find that it slides too much. I love my bamboo needles, and I just enjoy the natural material of the plant and the natural wood of the tree married together, or the bamboo. They just kind of seem like they belong together. So those are my thoughts. I hope that you enjoy them. And if you're interested, I have the information that I shared in the Wander collection that talks about sparrow and kestrel, mostly kestrel. The way I swatched with it, I show some examples and some pictures. It's a little special thing that I created to go in with the collection. And as a gift to you listeners today, if you want to have this, you can go to the podcast notes on the 6-Bit Storybooks website, www.6bitsstorybooks.com. Look for podcasts, and you can click on there and tell me where to send it, and I'll email you the collection. Or if you're in the States, you can text 44222 and text 2020 linen, number 20 linen, and I will send it to you in your email. You can do it that way. Just a little information. It tells you about the specific kestrel linen, but it also talks about the feel and the construction of linen, and kind of like a love affair that I have with it. So that's your free gift from me this week, and I hope you enjoy it. I hope you'll join Melody and I next week as we talk more together about our love for lighter, springier patterns that we're excited about. And if you are looking for a kindness to give to someone, can I just real quick offer you the chance to give something twice? The pattern Hannah's Courage came out. It is a lovely hat pattern. And I can say it's lovely not because I made it and designed it, but because I've seen so many people that have knit it create such lovely hats. It's an enjoyable, not overtaxing. It's a quick beanie style that you can actually make longer if you want. I'm going to attempt to knit it in linen just to play around with and see. But it's a pattern that comes as a lookbook. So it's a lot of fun with some vivid, beautiful pictures. And then it has a more printer-friendly version that just gives you the bare bones of what you need in order to make the pattern. And it is in US dollars, it's $3. And out of every $3 purchase, after taxes, after Ravelry fees, after PayPal, you can feel really good about donating just over $2 to Hannah. Hannah is our friend who just underwent brain surgery. And she is the lovely, creative energy that put a lot of work into Dwell. She's on the cover of our issue 2, wearing the Linden cardigan. So if you see the blonde-haired girl in a green cardigan, that's Hannah. All the proceeds from Hannah's Courage go directly to her. And so for less than a cup of coffee at your local shop, you can surprise someone, anyone, someone you may not even know on Ravelry. I like to see who has just joined Ravelry, and I click on them. I copy and paste their name into a pattern, and I usually try to give a gift and welcome them to Ravelry. That's a lot of fun, and it makes them feel very welcome. You can give them a treat. And at the same time, you can make a donation to Hannah. Use the hashtag hats for Hannah, and see what people have come up with. And I hope it'll be inspirational to you. I hope it's something that you'll get excited about. So if you choose to give that gift, then I just want to go ahead and give you my Mahalo Nui Loa's thank yous for supporting this. Now, I hope that you're able to create something beautiful, or at least notice something really beautiful about yourself. You have a lot of beautiful things that you offer the world, and you have a lot of creativity inside of you that I'm sure you're aware of, and so much more that we just don't even realize we have. So I hope that you'll take time today and this week to discover that. And join me again next week, where you and I will sit and visit with Melody and catch up on some springtime happenings or seasonal changes and get excited about that. Aloha.